broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Welcome to Point of View. Thank you so much for being with us. My name is Phimelo Modine. We're going to be here until 10 today, and 9:30 we have our favorite book feature. Oh boy, it's going to be wonderful. You know that last week we tried to speak to Lerato Trok, right? And she's an academic, a linguist, she's an author. And today, it is National Indigenous Language Day, International Indigenous Language Day. So I think this is such an appropriate conversation because she's got wonderful, wonderful books that she's going to suggest to us and others. Many of the books actually are not in English. And this is a really great opportunity for us to get all of those in, especially for those of you who also have children. So it's quite a lovely mix that she's going to be telling us about. We are going to go to Stilfontein. You remember Stilfontein and where we left that saga, where the police had brought up some bodies. There was a company that was leading an operation to finally make sure to bring up the bodies and miners that were stuck in there, and it was a professional company that was brought in to bring the right equipment and so on. And we kind of just left the scene. So our reporter, Pizol Mulemane, went back there today. And there seems to be an operation underway to seal some of the shafts. You know, that was very, very contentious at the time. And so we'll have that conversation with him a little later. It seems like on the back of a court order that was granted by a court in the United States of the idea that South Africans were suffering, South Africans were suffering a genocide. The court said, absolutely not, this is not plausible. On the back of that, there has been another interview that was granted in the past 24 hours by a close associate. I don't have that name. They were not given to us. Associate of the Trump administration, claiming that actually this atrocious behavior continues to go on in South Africa. As you may know, solidarity still is in the US. So we'll speak to Aisha Kaji, who is an international relations expert, just to give us a sense of what to make of all of this. As you know, as I said, you know, solidarity is still in the US. AfriForum is still in the US as well. So we need to really get to the bottom of how South Africa is going to respond to all of this. So that conversation is going to also happen at 9 o'clock.
Point of View.
Discussing the world around you.
On the street.
On the air.
And at kaya959.co.za.
You may have been affected by the floods around Johannesburg. So this evening, late this evening, there were reports around real flooding happening around Lone Hill area, the Four Ways area. And so we don't really have updates yet, but I can tell you tomorrow we'll make sure that the relevant authorities are able to give us an update on what has been done and what can be done. So we are hearing also reports about flooding happening in the northwest, a bridge that is really now, as we speak, around Fafung, which is underwater. So we're going to try as much as possible to get the relevant authorities to give us those updates. They are snowed under at the moment, and so it was quite difficult to get those interviews, but we'll make sure that by tomorrow we get some responses. But let's go to KZN, and we've been watching this for a while now, and it said more than 20 people have died in the floods in KZN over the past 2 months. Just to give us real updates on this, Dr. Elias Sithole, head of Disaster Management Center in KZN. Appreciate your time, sir. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening to the listeners.
I suppose where we are right now is that we've been getting warnings from the weather service saying that, you know, we must watch out for more rain, and the KZN is not going to also get sunshine anytime soon. Maybe give us an update on what your operations are currently in KZN. You know, is the still the rain still persisting? And I know that some people are also still missing.
Yes, let me indicate that I am representing the National Disaster Center.
All right.
Which is a center responsible for managing disaster in South Africa.
The national, nationally around the country.
Yes, okay. You are correct. The issue of the flood, the impact of the flood in KZN, which is really a problem because we have now 21 fatalities. One person is still missing. So the rescue team, special rescue teams, they're still searching for the person. Our disaster teams have been on the ground trying to assist the affected community. So, and also the NGOs, as we work with the NGOs, we deploy also the NGOs also to come on board and assist the situation in KZN.
It's great that you represented the National Center, because then we'll speak about that, what you know about Northwest and other areas as well. But if we stick for now to KZN, some of the people, as said by local government, had been relocated. And unfortunately, where they were placed, those areas themselves have also been flooded. What are the contingency plans for those who had been relocated to structures that right now are themselves still suffering from you know, another bout of flooding, so to speak?
Yeah, there is a plan which the Human Settlement Department nationally, working with the Human Settlement in the municipality in the province, there is a plan which they are implementing currently to make sure that those affected individuals or people who have been relocated, and we are able to recycling them in areas where we know that if it rains, those areas are not going to be flooded anymore. So there is a plan which the National Department of Human Settlement, they are currently implementing.
The situation as we speak right now with weather warnings of level 4 and I think some thunderstorms as well, you know, when you say there's a plan, and I know that the Minister has of Human Settlement has also been to KZN, have they been moved to higher areas? What can you elaborate a little bit on the plan?
Look, maybe I'll just speak broadly because the issue of settlement being flooded,
yes,
like people who are residing in informal settlement or in the normal area, those households become flooded. So the issue is bigger than just we relocate the community, because we have people who build houses in the floodplain areas. And also when you go to another area closer to Itegwini, you'll find that we have informal settlement which have been built in areas where they're not supposed to build any structures there.
Yeah.
So those are the bigger plans in terms of the disaster management teams at national and provincial government and the municipality, of course, bringing other departments in terms of how best then we can get land and then have a place where we can actually relocate all those people whom we think they are ready to be relocated. Because sometimes it's not easy just to relocate people, because some people they see that they've actually done a lot of investment in those areas. So it's more like we engage those communities so that they can see the value for them to move from those areas to the higher ground.
Dr. Stoller, I mean, we keep hearing from officials that, you know, we are now in a phase where we are dealing with climate change. Can you say from your experience that you are seeing more frequent occurrences of this kind of flooding, especially when you maybe say you're comparing it to what you've had to deal with in the past 5 years at this time of the year? Is that becoming more frequent? Are you finding that you are more stretched now?
Yeah, these weather events, they are becoming more frequent and deadly. If you compare, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, you could just see the difference in terms of now, even in winter season, where we normally say in those provinces they will just experience, you know, the cold and so on. During the winter season, you then experience destructive flood in those areas. So there is definitely the impact of climate change. And but as government, we've also, from our side, put those contingency in place in terms of how best we can augment our resources so that we're able to deal with issues of climate change. Of course, the infrastructure was built way back. So now the situation has changed. So which means that we need now to make sure that we bring new innovation so that those infrastructures are able to withstand the volume of water which we are experiencing right now.
I suppose from where you are, the challenge is not only that you have to now work with others, which I imagine has always been the case, but the speed with which you need to move, I think is unprecedented, because as people have been moved, as you know, for instance, in KZN, they were moved to one temporary location that also got flooded. So things have to move quite quickly.
Yes, yeah. One of the Deputy Director General who's heading the COCTA International, he always used to say that your speed in terms of how you respond to disasters determine in terms of how effective you are, and then people in terms of how they see you in terms of assisting them. So you are correct. In terms of the speed and the turnaround time, how we respond to disasters, but not only the speed, but also forward planning, which we are doing with other departments, but also making sure that these areas which we have identified as floodplain areas, as hotspot areas, where we know if we are receiving X amount of millimeter of rainfall, those areas are likely to be flooded. Then we know that those communities, they must not build any structure there. But we need to work with traditional leadership. We need to work with the municipality so that we're able to manage those kind of issues.
Minister Steenhuisen a few days ago was calling for, you know, the government to declare some areas disaster areas so that they can help with farmers and the losses that they've incurred. And I suppose this is now becoming quite a thing. Everybody wants their area to be declared a disaster area. Are you finding that, you know, the bar has to be adjusted a bit in what you would declare a disaster?
Look, some of these impacts of this rainfall are really genuine incidents.
Yes.
You do find that when you go to the agricultural sector, you tend to find that if they're experiencing rains, you find that the roads have been washed away.
Mm.
Sometimes even the livestock have been affected.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you find that the farmers have got crops and then those crops become affected as well. So some of these incidences are really genuine. So they really require us to look it very closely so that we can see whether we can actually classify them, because the classification is closer to declaration. So when we say classification, we mean any department, they can actually reallocate the resources which they have, including finances, so that they're able to assist those affected communities. So the minister, based on that sector, I would say those are things which we as disaster management, we need to do an assessment to make sure that we move to that direction where we are able to assist the affected sector.
So Dr. Stola, how does it work? Is it so much, is it the cost of infrastructure damaged or lives lost that determines how you regard it as a disaster situation, for instance? And the reason I'm asking you this, for instance, we have reports of the Northwest. Now, the Northwest is quite vast, but you have populations that are quite sparse in some areas. And you know, but when you weigh it up, you'd say, well, only 5 people were affected in that area. But the area may be vast. And yes, maybe only 5 people or 5 families, but that completely, you know, disrupts their way of life, whether they get to a clinic, to a school, and so on. So it must be a difficult thing, because obviously that's a rural area, fewer people getting affected, but it may be quite impactful.
Of course, yeah, it can be really impactful. Actually, what our process, we start asking ourselves in terms of the capacity of the municipality and the province to say, if they've been affected by floods, just an example, floods, then we do have municipalities which they have capacity to respond and then assist those affected communities.
Mm-hmm.
But in other situations, you have municipalities, sometimes they are, we call them dysfunctional municipalities, municipalities really which they need help, and those ones they find it very difficult to respond. That's why then we bring national departments, we bring stakeholders to assist those communities. Coming to the point which you just raised, which is very, very important. We always say if the flood happens in an open area where there's no residents, there's nothing there. We regard that as just flood because no infrastructure has been affected and so on. But
you
take a similar situation, you bring it closer to the residential area, then you have a situation where communities, for example, the household or the houses, they would wash away and be flooded. The roads, they would be washed away. For example, when you go to rural areas, you tend to find that most of the roads in closer to those villages, they are not tar roads. You know, those are gravel roads. So once they experience those heavy rains, those roads, they tend to be washed away and so on. So based on our analysis, taking all that information together, and the capacity of the municipality, the financial standing of the municipality, and some of the resources which the province they have, then we can say, okay, maybe then if we move towards a direction where we classify, then we're able to allocate the money from national level so that they're able to utilize that money to rebuild the infrastructure and so forth. And so, because sometimes if you go to these villages, you go to Northwest, you go to the Eastern Cape, you tend to find that you have a village on the other side of the river, and then on the other side you have got a town, but in between you have got a low-lying bridge. And that bridge, it tends to be flooded when really, you know, sometimes it's even being washed away by water. And then the kids, they can't go to school. And people want to go to the clinics, they can go to the clinics, and so, even to people who want to go to work and they can't because the bridge has been washed away and the river is still there's still a lot of water in things in the river.
When it comes to warnings and giving us a little bit of precautionary advice, it's tricky. We have a strange situation here in the city of Johannesburg where the MMC of Transport has literally declared maybe 60% of our bridges unsafe. And he says there's a technical report to suggest that they are unsafe. Look, if we were then heeding the call to be safe and stay away from unsafe bridges, I suppose none of us would be going on the freeway. So the question I then ask is that, you know, how do we balance it out? Because we've already been told that our bridges are not safe. You then have to have the responsibility of warning us about the fact that we must be careful with these kinds of things. Where do we balance it out?
Yeah, I would say, actually, where do we draw the line?
Yeah.
I think the issue here is that you will have a situation where we have got the structural integrity of the bridge, which actually needs the structural, I would say, intervention in that space as well. Then, on the other hand, we have a situation where we have got a low-lying bridge. So, yeah, when I say a low-lying bridge, is a bridge where someone will be driving maybe in the middle of the night, and then you come there, then you find that there's water now, or the water things they are running on top of the bridge, and then if you try to cross it, then your car is going to be washed away. So that issue of the structural integrity of the bridge, there are departments which are specifically geared in terms of doing assessment of those kind of bridges, and then they can advise those engineers in terms of whether it is still safe for people to drive on the bridge. So I would say for now, because that is a different part.
Got you.
Okay, Got you. It's a different part of a situation which need to be dealt with, and then some of the measures which need to be implemented in that space. But lastly, maybe responding to the question of the early warning. The early warning which we normally receive from the South African Weather Services, we distribute all the early warning to all the provinces, and the provinces also to municipalities, and also we use all the media platforms to make sure that we reach to all the communities. Yes, we know that we might not reach Makoko in the village there because Makoko might not have a cell phone or the television and so on. So we use then community structures to reach those communities.
All right. Dr. Elias Tolle, thank you so much for giving us your time there. I really appreciate it. Head of Disaster Management Center nationally, just giving us a really a broad sense of what things are looking like across the country and how we should all be heeding the call to be a bit safer. We cross now to the Gift of the Givers in KZN just to give us an update on how the rescue efforts are proceeding at the moment. Gifilo Chweni is Gift of the Givers, KZN Community Liaison. Thank you very much for your time. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela. Thank you so much for having me.
Just maybe perhaps give us an update on what your efforts are like in KZN and what the situation is right now.
So the situation at the moment is a bit volatile. The rain is still ongoing following the level 5 warnings of heavy rain. Obviously, you know, with the how the previous week went, rains haven't been as bad as they were last week as yet.
Yes.
However, we are receiving warnings and we are anticipating that things may get worse. On the ground, people are obviously quite anxious and scared for their lives, you know. But one thing I can tell you is that we do have our teams on standby to assist where necessary.
So what seems to be happening more frequently? Is it the homes flooding? You know, we're getting reports of cars being washed away, bridges obviously collapsing. Maybe give us a better sense of what seems to be your biggest concern and occurring more regularly in KZN as we speak.
Well, Pamela, it's also about infrastructure because at the end of the day, rains are, it's natural, you know, it's natural for heavy rains to occur. But at the end of the day, it's about where the rain lands and how the stormwater draining happens. So firstly, it's the roads. The stormwater draining is a big problem, but also people's homes are built either close to riverbanks, to canals or floodplains, which is then also an issue. So in terms of what we're seeing as the issue, I can't blame it on the weather. That's not something we have control over. And where people are placed are also put there because they have nowhere else to go. So in that instance, then the issue may become government in terms of ensuring that people are home, are housed correctly and in safe places. And then the other big issue is obviously the infrastructure. Mm. There isn't enough recovery time in between one disaster to the next. And I'm sorry to say, but you know, for after the floods that you had last week, then the government takes a rest over the weekend. Something happens and then now we're back to square one because no one's taken the effort to repair the roads, to repair the bridges. And then we find ourselves in the same issue in terms of cars being like shipped away and people's lives being lost. That's also a matter of infrastructure that the government needs to take care of.
And again, you know, I really don't want to put you, you know, on the spot here with responding to government because that's not really your job. But some of the people we're hearing who've lost their lives were people who had been relocated by government to an area that got flooded. You know, in your sense, was there enough precautionary measure to make sure that the area was safe? And I know what government has said, but when you look at the area, some of those areas, you know, do you think enough was done to make sure that people were safe?
Absolutely not. I do think it was a very rushed job. And I'm saying that, obviously, thinking that the government is under a lot of pressure.
Yes.
But within that pressure, then the wrong decisions are being made. When supposed to be temporary housing, it should at the very least keep people safe while you're trying to figure out more permanent measures. So it's like the same thing. I'll go back to infrastructure. When you put people in a place that's supposed to be safe and it continues to flood, then there's an infrastructure problem once again. So the government maybe is in a rush. There's a bit of haste in terms of decision-making, and they're not really taking precaution in ensuring that people's lives are safe.
Sure. Look, I know that you continue to do work there and, you know, people who want to support your efforts, I know you're looking for hot meals and blankets and so on. Where do they find you once again?
So they can contact Gift of the Givers directly at info@giftofthegivers.org or they can call any of our toll lines and with just specifically say what it is they're trying to assist with. Is it funds? Is it resources? Is it just as a matter of being available to assist as volunteering, you know, that kind of thing? So just being in contact with anyone from our offices, we're always available. People are, we're always keen to accept any kind of help, corporate help, big donations, small donations. At the end of the day, we do need the community to come together in order for us to ensure the safety of our other residents in this country.
Thank you very much, Kifilo Cheney, who is a gift of the KZN community liaison. And they are on the ground. Please follow their websites and so on if you want to assist. And be, as she said, be very clear about how you want to assist, because that assistance is definitely needed right now in KZN.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.